Hello and welcome to the Soccer Speakeasy. Today is the 16th of September, Wednesday, 2020. I'm Mike Arace with the excellent crew here. Jacob Myers, our fine Columbus Crew beat writer, and Kyle Robertson at K-Rob Photo, most famously. Let's talk some soccer, gentlemen. The crew is coming off a 2-2 draw at Chicago from the Soldier Field. After giving up two goals in its first 10 games, the crew gave up two goals in the first 14 minutes or so of the game in Chicago. Their defense looked, how shall we say, you have a comparison, guys? I haven't thought of anything analogous. They were porous. A lot of space there. And you knew it was an aberration just because they played such consistently excellent defense all year with 10 shutouts. Then they came back and kind of dominated over the last, 50 to 60 to 70 minutes of the game. I guess you got to be happy with the tie. Jacob, your thoughts on the game after talking to the coach and the general manager and select players that are made available on a limited time basis without much time to ask any follow-up questions?
Well, I didn't talk to Bez for this game, but I thought Caleb Porter's assessment of the game was very accurate. And he started with saying right away they didn't start the game the right way. It was completely unlike what they had done in the 10 games prior, as you alluded to, Mike. They just simply were extremely flat, easy to break down, a ton of space in the midfield, and didn't really push back against Chicago at all. And then Caleb Porter also...
They got some XG going after that.
They did. And what?
No, they got lucky.
Well, we'll get to that, Kyle. I agree with that. I think they were fortunate to get away with a point. But like you said, Mike, good to come away with a point. I think it's something that they'll hold their heads high on. But if you're talking about XG, Mike, Chicago had over 3 XG, which means that the average team based on those chances would have scored 3 goals or more. So in a way, you can look at it as Chicago kind of blew the match, which obviously they did. But you're right. The crew created very well. It was over 2 XG for them, if you're looking at that. But, you know, just in general.
No, we're not looking at that. I was kidding. Don't talk about XG. Go.
It goes into the whole. It's one stat to look at and compare to the game on a whole. I thought it was a good measure of it.
I think what fans want to know is how is Zeller Ryan and how is Nagby and what's wrong with them? During the COVID age, there's no information on injuries. They're hiding behind, I presume, the fact that they don't want to share or cannot share private. Basically, Kyle, what's the college version of this? There's a FERPA,
HIPAA.
Right? Yeah, HIPAA. There you go. I mean, now they got COVID. There's HIPAA and there's COVID, and they just say unavailable for play. You could have a guy who's sawed in half by accident while falling drunk on the railroad tracks, or he might have a sprained toe, or he might have COVID, or he might have blown out his shoulder. And you don't know which one it is. So anyway, I think what the fans want to know, Jacob, is how is Zeller Ryan and how is Nagby, neither of whom played in Chicago over the weekend?
Yeah, so before that game, we knew that Lucas Zeller Ryan was questionable, although we did not get specifics on what the injury was or if he had trained when we had asked about it. Also, Darlington Nagby was a total surprise to us. He was not listed at all in the injury report and played the game before. But from what Caleb Porter said after the game is Zeller Ryan had been dealing with a grade 1 MCL sprain, which doesn't mean there's a tear. So he missed 2 games now. And Nagby, what he described him as minor knee knocks. And these happened against Philadelphia. It sounds like both could be available, if not should be available, barring any other setbacks for Saturday against Nashville.
I think you got to factor that in, Kyle. I mean, they've been okay without one. They've been okay without the other. They've managed to put down, have the best record in the league to this juncture, largely without Zeller Ryan. Losing them both is another deal altogether in the midfield, is it not?
Yeah, but I mean, you're going against the fire where, you know, I think the crew obviously, you know, you want to get the 3 points, and you know they should be extremely happy with the draw. But at the same time, you know, it's you know, they're towards the bottom of the table in the Eastern Conference. So I mean, I think it's a you know, we've talked about the depth all year. You know, we thought, you know, I always said from the beginning it was one of the deepest teams they've ever had, and I think they're showing that this year, and that they can play, you know, a couple games here and here against lower competition and still try to get, you know, points. But at the end of the day, I think they're very lucky against Chicago.
How are they lucky? Because I thought they played very well in the second half.
Well, they're two goals. Did you see that? Zardes
well, one of them was a doubleheader by accident.
Yeah. And then, was it Boateng had the shot? And it,
I didn't see the second goal.
Yeah, it deflected and went right to Zardes, who was like 5 feet away. He took a touch and hit it left side. I think those are two very lucky goals.
Mokhtar had the shot, not Boateng. Yeah. Then I agree, those were lucky goals. Then you had Mensah, who was just headed it right at the goalkeeper at the at the post, where the keeper didn't even have time to react. He was just in the right place, right time. Also, you had Chicago's Frankowski literally just kick it right at room, where he had 80% of the net open. I think they were fortunate to come away with a draw. But if we're looking big picture of these six games of what they're calling this phase one, they get 11 points.
Phase one, it's got a phase there.
Everything has a phase now, Mike. Don't you know that? I mean, we even have phases for, you know, going back in the building and all that. But 11 points in those six games, and they're still at the top of the table. I think they're walking away with their heads held pretty high.
So let's get to the standings, Kyle. The Columbus Crew SC, the CCSC, they played, they have 24 points.
Shield contenders.
Pardon?
Shield contenders.
You dropped the shield on us. Oh my God. What was it he said originally? They can win the shield this year.
Yeah.
When did I say that?
He refrained from saying that.
So they actually are shield contenders, I guess. You know, they're in first place with more points than anyone else in the league.
Halfway through the year.
I think Jacob, you keep saying it every year.
I've been here 1.5 years, Mike.
Finds a nut, you know? So the Crew with 24 points and 11 games played, 7-1-3 is the record. 18 goals for, 4 against, plus 14. That remains by far the best goal differential in the league. It's twice as good a differential as the second-place Philadelphia Union, which is plus 7 through 11 games. So Crew 24 points, Philadelphia Union 21 points, the FC of the Toronto 21 points, the SC of the Orlando City 19 points, Montreal Impact 16 points, New York City of the FC 16 points, New York Red Bulls, definitely plural, 14 points, New England Revolution 14 points, Nashville SC 12 points, and the FC of the United Atlanta 11 points. Those are the 10 teams above the playoff bar, just below DC United with 10 points. And Jacob, the next phase of the schedule has been announced / released / unveiled.
Yeah, they start up again Saturday at home against Nashville, and then play Wednesday the 23rd against Minnesota United, a rematch of the team that knocked them out of the MLS's back tournament. And then at Hartford, Connecticut, your old stomping grounds, Mike. Against
Dillon Stadium. That's a retooled Dillon Stadium. That's where my high school team played football.
No, really.
Most of the city teams played football, yeah.
Were you quarterback?
And the freshman team, I was the third string quarterback. And I was the third string quarterback on the freshman team. And as I trotted out to take the one snap I would have taken all year against Avon, the whistle blew. So I was jogging on the field as both teams were jogging off. So that was my quarterback career. It's a true fact.
I'm glad we could jog down memory lane with you for that.
Well, you asked.
No, I love
you
it.
Asked, you're going to get an answer. Okay, continue.
So did you technically play one snap, or
not there. I did get clotheslined any number of times running down the middle on the kickoff team. Yeah. I got some CTE problems ahead of me just for that 1 year.
Did they have soccer in your high school then or no?
No soccer, no. It was an inner city American school.
So yeah, they finish up Sunday the 27th in this first three games they release against Toronto. And the league, what they say is this allows them to kind only releasing three games to assess some travel guidelines, mostly for those three Canadian teams and what they need to do there. So the three Canadian teams are playing in the U.S. and Toronto is the only one not playing at an MLS field. But Minnesota and Toronto, I mean, you just listed the standings there. Those are two teams that I think we will really get to see again. Just where does this Crew team stack up if they're at full health against some of these teams who want to be competing at the top of their conference at season's end?
That was a good game the other night with the Sporting Kansas City and the FC of Minnesota. The battle for the top of the standings there out west. Kansas City, 20 points in 11 games. Number two, Seattle, 18 points in 10 games. And then Mini with 11 games played, 17 points. Guys, real quick, change of gears. We'll grind them a little bit. What do you think of Chicago's new rebranding and the logo?
Well, they had some issues like when this logo came out. Do you remember this at all, Mike? It had something to do with the specific design. It was like a crown, and it had something to do, I thought, with like Hispanic gangs in the city and like those colors being just identified with gangs. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was something to do with that. And
they should have went with that one, right, Kyle?
Yeah.
They should have went with the gang one.
Yeah.
It's exactly the audience, like the Hispanic audience is what they want to attract into being back at Soldier Field. So I was just kind of baffled that they had stuck with that after pushback. Also, like the colors are just not what it used to be, right? So I don't think it's synonymous with if the Crew went away from black and gold, but it's another rebrand that they stuck FC on FC or SC on the back of it. No creativity.
Yeah, I think that it looks like a simple design, but yet, you know, sometimes the simple designs kind of fail. And I think that's that's what you got there with their, you know.
I'd like to put this out to the listeners. Instead of FC or SC, I think there should be another alternative. I'm not sure what it is, but
Wanderers.
Another two-letter thing that stands for something that's not FC or SC. As creative as you want, send your responses to Jacob. Give him your Twitter address.
It's at Michael A Race 1.
Oh, actually, that's kind of inactive right now. Send it to at K Rob Voto. So any suggestions, not an SC, not an FC, but some other.
I like Wanderers, like Wolverhampton or Bolton Wanderers. It's used in some other leagues too. That would just be a nice addition, I think.
I was thinking of like PAC, like post-apocalyptic city, or, you know, something along those lines. You can use your imagination. Okay, Jacob, anything new? I've been yammering on here about inconsequential crap. What about stuff that folks want to know? Well, for instance, the status of Zellerion and Nagbe, and on from there. What's the latest with the Columbus Crew of the SC?
So Friday, we're going to be getting a tour of the Performance Center. That should be pretty exciting. It's, you know, I've wandered over toward the edge of where we can be on the north side of the stadium and just kind of seen the progress of the Performance Center on the west side of Moffray. And it's going up pretty quickly. I mean, it's an aggressive timeline to get done at the same time of the stadium, but hopefully have something from that. Also, the Crew recently hired a vice president of marketing, Patrice Croce, I'm pronouncing that right. That's just a little news item. They also had a new academy director. That's online as well. We haven't had a show since they played home against Cincinnati. So if you want to talk about that at all, which personally I thought was probably their best offensive performance of the season. But then again, defensively, they have some things to fix from this week. So I don't know how much time you want to spend on that, but I wanted to bring that up.
Okay. So all we know, Jacob, is the three games upcoming. That's all we know right now?
Correct.
Okay. So as Jacob mentioned, the league did come up and invent some more schedule for the league. This coming Saturday, the 19th, Nashville will be at the Moffray Stadium on Wednesday, or should I say SC Nashville or Nashville SC? Kyle, which one do you prefer?
Nashville FC.
He's going with the F. Wednesday, the 23rd of September, Minnesota United FC. It's another FC.
They're all FC at
Moffray Stadium. And then on Sunday, September 27th, it's TOFC. It kind of has the Toronto. The Toronto's arguably the best team in the East. And I say arguably because right now the Crew has the best record, and you are what your record says you are. But that Toronto team is going to be right there going down the stretch per usual. And you know how Crew fans love Toronto. So let's throw it to both of you guys. Nice W against Cincinnati prior to the lucky victory in Chicago, quote unquote lucky. Jacob, no fans in the stands at Soldier Field. The Crew was among the first teams, not the first. There were four or five games prior in MLS, the first league to allow fans into the stadium. There are smatterings here and there in the NFL, including Cleveland and Cincinnati. But how did things go with the 1,500 in the old director set against the FC of the Cincinnati?
Yeah, I spoke to about a dozen fans after that game. And what I took away was primarily it worked well. It was more so just compliance with other fans that some fans had an issue with, specifically toward the end of the game, especially when they come over and sing Wiseman in front of the Nordex and people started to gather outside their seats. Enforcement seemed to be spotty throughout the stadium, although some ushers were doing it very well. I think more in the Nordex, where you expect your fans maybe to be more moving around and talking to people. What I thought was a little misleading was that they had 1,500 fans for a almost 20,000 capacity stadium, but they pretty much blocked off the entire upper deck, and they blocked off the west side just for families and friends of staff and players, which is fine if you want to separate them. I think it would just be best, and it seemed like some fans I talked to also thought the upper decks would be open so you could space them out a bit more, but that wasn't the case. All in all, what I got was between 75 to 90% of was the compliance rate that some fans gave, and it got worse toward the end of the game. So honestly, it's probably what we all expected. You weren't going to have 100%. I would just remind everyone to go to please, please, please keep wearing a mask and keep your distance from people so we can all enjoy things like going to sporting events again.
Are they planning on having fraternity night at Moffray Stadium?
No, I'm not aware, but I think I might boycott if they do.
I must correct myself. The Toronto game, which is a home Toronto game in East Hartford, Connecticut, is at Pratt & Whitney Stadium at Rensselaer Field. Rensselaer Field is a Pratt & Whitney, that's in East Hartford. That was the stadium built for UConn football when they went big time in football, such as it was in the Big East way back when. Rensselaer, it was built on top of an old airplane landing strip that was used for testing Pratt & Whitney engines. So that is Sunday, September 27, 2020, in Mrs. A. Race's hometown of East Hartford, Connecticut. I'm looking forward to that game. Maybe I'll sneak out to that, you know? It's a Sunday game. 7:30. Why do you play at 7:30 on a Sunday? All right. Is there anything else you guys want to add? I've covered everything that I've forgotten about on my mental checklist. You guys have anything?
Continue just to check out our stuff at dispatch.com. All the Crew stuff is posted at dispatch.com/sports/crew.
Kyle, how's the shooting going?
It's been going good. We've are still in the stands, kind of up high a little bit. We're not allowed onto the field yet, and we probably won't be on the field the rest of the year. But we got a couple things worked out, and so I think things are looking good, as good as they can be. So I think.
Where are you posting your award winning photos, Kyle?
On dispatch.com/photos.
Okay.
With an S.
And Jacob, you have a conversation coming up that you're going to record and post with the noted author and Man Booker Prize winner who has written a tome about the Save the Crew movement. And he ought to know, who is this and when are you going to sit down and talk and what's the deal?
Yeah, his name's Pete McGinty, a I think a good he has a good relationship with Alex Fisher in the partnership, and I'll be speaking to him and Morgan Hughes about the Save the Crew book, and it more looks at the leadership of Save the Crew and not necessarily the holders of the keys in the city. I would describe it as a history book, and it kind of allows you to make your own opinions about what went on behind the scenes in terms of Precourt and Garber's motivations and everything we have talked about before. So I'll be sitting down with them, and I'll have something posted to the website as well.
So Alex is his major source, huh?
Well, he's not quoted too much in the book other than the foreword.
He picked the author but didn't tell him anything, right? God, I love America. All right, I think that's about it for the Soccer Speakeasy. For our fine crew, beat writer Jacob Myers and Kyle Robertson, the award-winning photographer, I'm Mike Arace. Thanks for joining us. Guys, you want to throw out all your handles again?
@_JC Myers. And I think next episode or a future episode, I'm going to talk with color broadcaster Jordan Angeli. So we'll have her on the show.
Oh, outstanding.
She's been very good.
Yeah. Yep. All right, that's it for us. Patrick Flaherty, our producer, wherever you are, kick us out of here.